Okay, welcome to our lecture on chest pain today. So we're going to start off with a case study like we always do. In this case, there's a 62-year-old male presents to the eMERGE department with a one-hour history of chest pain, shortness of breath that's getting worse as time goes on. He is diaphoretic and in moderate distress. His past medical history is significant for hypertension, hypercholesterolemia, type 2 diabetes, and he is a non-smoker. He is on Bisalpril 25 milligrams daily, simvastatin or Lipitor 40 milligrams daily, and metformin 1 gram twice a day. He recently returned from Florida where he spends his winters, and his vitals are as follows. Blood pressure is 160 over 90, heart rate 110, respirate 22, O2 sat 97% on room air. So this is probably a good place to stop and talk about different presentations of chest pain in the eMERGE, and then we'll get his physical exam and see what we think he has.
So in general, when somebody presents to the emergency room with chest pain, we want to first assess the type of chest pain that is coming. So is it a crushing type of chest pain, a sharp? Is there heaviness with it? Is it dull, achy? And what was the onset like? Has it been over a short period of time, minutes, hours, days, weeks? Is this a type of pain that they've experienced in the past? And in the past, what has been done? Is there anything that's currently making the pain better, making it pain worse? Is it associated with respiration at all, such as coughing or just deep inhalation or even regular inhalation? Where is it located? Is it in the center of the chest? Does it radiate anywhere to the arms, etc.? Also, it is important to note if they've had any recent travel, particularly any recent long travel, meaning any risk of immobility that might have caused any kind of clots. If they've had any recent surgery, they would also be predisposed to clotting. And of course, their past medical history, is it significant for any coagulation disorders? Do they have a history of heart disease, COPD, etc.? And then once you move to the physical exam, obviously the first thing to check is going to be the vital signs and all of the vital signs, and even checking for blood pressure in both arms to see if there is a difference in those arms. You need to do a full cardio and respiratory exam. And sometimes you do need to do an MSK exam as well, especially in the upper extremities if they're having pain in the chest wall and that radiates to the arm, or any movement of the upper extremities that is associated with the chest wall pain. The other thing that you do want to make sure to check for is calf swelling or tenderness, and you're basically just checking to see their risk of a DVT.
All right, so the most common cause of chest pain we usually think of would be a myocardial infarction or MI. So the history for this, so they can have onset that's minutes, hours, or even days long. They often describe it as a crushing chest pain or heaviness or an elephant or a bus sitting on their chest. It's often mid-sternal chest pain, but it can be left-sided or even epigastric. Sometimes they can even come up in with like upper right quadrant pain, and we mistake this for a gallbladder attack. They're often sweaty, but not always. Often, if it's a fairly large heart attack, they're short of breath. Classically, they'll have pain radiating into the jaw, neck, or left arm. And sometimes you actually have to, if the patient has had a previous heart attack, you should ask them, does this feel like your previous heart attack? Because they often, you know, they may have had an atypical presentation the first time, and this feels very similar. It's, you know, if they say this feels exactly like my last heart attack, you should be treating that very seriously.
So, Rachel, the typical presentation of the MI is, like you said, they get this crushing, heavy, elephant on the chest type of pain that can be mid-sternal or left-sided with radiation to the arm, and then also some sweating and shortness of breath. But obviously, we obviously have to be a little more aware in patients who may have atypical presentation, like those with diabetes and also women. And how is that different from the typical presentation that we discuss?
So basically, my rule of thumb is that any woman basically over the age of 50 or a person with diabetes, if they come in with pain above the umbilicus, then they get a workup for MI.
Okay. Okay. Interesting.
That's sort of my
Because they often present with more stomach issues than your standard elephant on the chest.
Yeah, they'll present with stomach issues. And I mean, you don't want to assume, you know, everybody always thinks with the gallbladder, you know, female fat 40 or whatever the acronym is. So if, you know, an overweight middle-aged woman comes in with right upper quadrant pain, people always assume that it's a gallbladder attack, but it could be an MI. So it's easier to rule that out than to miss it and have a really sick patient on your hands.
Okay.
So on physical exam, you're just going to get a general overall of their appearance. They're often pale, sweaty, tachypneic. Their vital signs, they can show tachycardia, hypo or hypertension. The respiratory rate is typically not crazily high, but it's usually slightly elevated. You want to get bilateral blood pressures in each arm to make sure that they're equal. You're going to do a cardiorespiratory exam, which is often normal in people having a heart attack, unless it's really severe or they've got some sort of underlying arrhythmia. You also will always want to do an abdominal exam to check for any evidence of a AAA and, you know, bruises into the abdomen and other things like that that can be cardiac related. The investigations you would get would be, obviously, the first thing you're going to get is an ECG to check for ST elevation or depression, arrhythmias, Q waves, any sort of cardiac cause of their chest pain. Then you're going to get blood work. So you're going to get a troponin, CK, CBC, BUN, creatinine lights, and a D-dimer if clinically indicated. And even in massive ST elevation MIs, if they've come in really early, the initial troponin can be negative. So you're going to repeat the troponin at the 3 or 8 hour mark if initially negative and you have a clinical suspicion. The 3 hour mark can only be done if you have high sensitivity troponins available and you have like a low risk patient, a patient you don't really think is having an MI, but you need to rule it out. If you have a high risk patient, then you definitely want to get the 8 hour trope. And you're going to get a chest x-ray, check for widened mediastinum and indications of congestive heart failure, because if this MI has been sort of grumbling on for a couple days, they can go into failure. And also check for pneumonia, particularly in the elderly patients. A pneumonia can precipitate an MI. So how do we treat MIs in the emergency department? Well, the acronym is MONA. So morphine, oxygen, nitrogen, and aspirin. So you're going to get that ECG right away. If it shows any evidence of an infarction, you're going to give the aspirin, put oxygen on, although there's some debate around this now, whether we need to give oxygen if their oxygen level's normal. And if their blood pressure is high enough, you can give them some nitro and see if we can relieve their pain. So if you get your ECG back and it shows an ST elevation MI, you're going to try and get this patient in for a PCI as soon as possible. The goal is PCI from door, like they walk in the emerge door, to PCI in 90 minutes if you're in a site that does PCIs. If you're in a site that doesn't have access to PCI, then the goal is door to TNKs in 30 minutes if you're in a remote site, and then you would transfer them to a site where they could get their angiogram done. If they're having a non-ST elevation MI, you're going to admit them. You're going to refer them for angiography. You're going to start them on all of the heart medications if they're not already on them, beta blocker, ACE inhibitors, or an ARB if they have an ACE intolerance, Plavix or clopidogrel, a statin. And if they're at all unstable, they develop CHF, or they have any evidence of valvular disease, then they're going to need a cardiology referral more urgently.
Obviously, all of them will need a cardiac referral, but those people need it fast. Okay.
Yeah. They all get angiography. It's just whether they get it today or in a couple days.
Okay. Okay. And for details on looking at ECGs and determining ST elevation, etc., we go into a little bit more detail on that in the cardiology section. And since this is the ER section, we're not going to go into grave detail on that. And we cover all the arrhythmias in more detail there.
So the next common cause of chest pain in the emergency department, it would be PE or pulmonary embolus. So these patients, they typically present with pleuritic type chest pain, so pain with deep inspiration. They're often very short of breath, and you need to figure out if they have any risk factors, surgery, immobilization, i.e. long flights, long car rides. They've had the flu, so they've been lying in bed. If they have cancer, hormone replacement therapy or contraceptive medications, coagulation disorders, pregnancy, morbid obesity, these are all risk factors for developing PEs. They'll often present with unilateral leg swelling and calf tenderness, i.e. a DVT that is the cause of their PE, but not always. So, and then on physical exam, these patients are almost always tachycardic unless they're on some sort of cardiac drug to lower their heart rate, they're almost always tachycardic. They often, but not always, have decreased oxygen saturation and increased respiratory rate. They can sometimes actually have hemoptysis, but this is usually fairly rare. So on the cardiorespiratory exam, when you examine them, you'll find, sometimes you'll find decreased air entry on one base, swollen, tender, reddened calf. But otherwise, their exam tends to be fairly normal, except that they look like they're in a bit of distress. So you would get all your routine blood work, you would get a CBC, BUN, creatinine, lights. Not so much because the BUN, creatinine, lights would cause chest pain, but if you're going to start them on a medication, you need to know how their kidneys are functioning. You get a D-dimer. I mean, if your clinical suspicion is very high, you could probably skip the D-dimer and just go straight to an ultrasound to confirm a DVT if you have access to that. If your clinical suspicion is not that high, then you would get the D-dimer. So you can get a chest x-ray, can show atelectasis. Sometimes it shows a wedge-shaped infiltrate. Sometimes they have a raised hemidiaphragm, but it's often normal. And the gold standard for checking for PEs is viral chest CT, which will show a filling defect. So they get injected with IV contrast, and then they watch how it fills through the lungs. And the radiologist will be able to see that it's not filling in a spot where it should be.
Right. And I think the thing to note there is that it's specifically a spiral CT of the chest, which obviously is going to focus on the chest and looks a little bit at it a little bit differently, right? Regular CT can catch it too, but the spiral CT is a little bit more sensitive.
So we treat these patients with oral anticoagulants. So typically either a novel oral anticoagulant such as apixaban, dabigatran, rivaroxaban, and endoxaban.
Or you could go with warfarin.
Yeah. Right?
But then the thing to remember about the warfarin is you have to bridge it with a heparin or one of the heparin-like compounds until the INR is appropriate.
And sometimes if the kidney function is really poor, then you need to treat with heparin as well.
Oh, good point.
And if they're completely contraindicated to anticoagulants for some reason, then you can have an IVC filter placed to prevent any bigger clots from getting in. So basically, so if their patients are stable, they can actually be discharged from the emergency on some sort of blood thinner and with, you know, fairly close follow-up with the family doctor. But if they're unstable, you're going to admit them, start them on oxygen, start the anticoagulants in the hospital. And if they've had a massive PE, either extremely unstable, like they have a saddle embolus, they're showing right heart strain, then you may sometimes, or they're coding, then you might try IV thrombolytic therapy. The ideal intervention would be interventional thrombolytic therapy provided by interventional radiology. There they can target where the thrombolytics go. It's preferred. It's safer. There's way less contraindications, but this is only done at
high-tech centers.
Academic centers, yeah. Specialty centers, usually in big urban areas.
Yeah, it's often not available. Okay, so another reason someone might present with chest pain, which is always kind of a big concern of mine because it's so fatal, is an aortic dissection.
Yeah. So luckily, these aren't super common, but you don't want to be the clinician that misses this. So these patients present with extreme pain, like agonizing, writhing on the bed pain. Usually they report like a tearing sensation, like something is ripped through them. And it's a sudden onset. Like very sudden onset in the chest, back, or abdomen. And unlike an MI, which typically gets worse over time as there's more and more damage to the heart, the pain is worst when the aortic dissection first starts. There's some risk factors for this. Atherosclerosis, which is a risk factor for pretty much everything. Marfan syndrome, congenital defects, and trauma. So these people can sometimes present unconscious. They'll have a syncopal episode. They often have a BP differential, which is classified as greater than 20 millimeters of mercury between the arms. They'll have a pulse differential. So if you physically put your fingers on their radial arteries and palpate their pulses, they're not in sync.
So that's the big thing, is the pulse is paroxysmal, right? Yep. Because the MI and the PE don't present with those.
No. I mean, and as you get older, you can end up with a bit of a differential in your arms anyways. Not usually more than 20. You know, up to 10 millimeters difference between the arms can be fairly normal. And there are a couple other conditions that would cause BP differentials in the arms, but they're not going to present with this extreme pain. Sometimes they have an aortic murmur, especially if the dissection has gone up into the, you know, arch. into the arch. Thank you. And cardiac tamponade can present. So they'll be hypertensive, narrow pulse pressures, and very, very quiet heart sounds. And sometimes, depending where the dissection is, they actually present like a stroke because it's affected the blood flow to the brain. So aortic dissections are classified in two ways. The Stanford type, which is basically A and B. So Stanford type A involves the ascending aorta and the aortic arch, and this requires immediate surgery. Type B only involves the distal aorta, so below the subclavian artery, and this can be managed medically unless complications from dissection are present, and if they're in the emerge in extreme pain, there's usually complications. And then there's the DeBakey type classification. So type 1 is both ascending and descending aortic dissections. Type 2 is ascending aorta only. Type 3A is descending thoracic aorta only, so within the chest. And then type 3B is descending thoracic and abdominal aorta, so this would be in the abdomen as well as the chest cavity, but only going down. So if you do an ECG, you might see left ventricular hypertrophy, you might see evidence of myocardial ischemia or infarction. If you have time to get a chest x-ray, it's not really indicated, but it'll often show mediastinal widening. Imaging is an aortic angiography is the gold standard. If this is not available in your site, you're not at a cardiac site where this is possible, then you would do CT angiography. And these are both very sensitive and specific. The treatment for this is to lower the blood pressure and the heart rate and immediate referral for thoracic surgery. However, a large percentage of these patients do not survive.
So the key with these guys is to get quick diagnosis and treatment. And so although we talked about what a chest x-ray may show, we really just want to be skipping that. Getting a chest x-ray is going to be wasting our time and risking the patient's life further in this case.
Exactly.
Okay.
So the last thing we're going to touch on as far as things that cause chest pain are pneumothorax. So these are certainly more common than aortic dissections, but probably less common than PEs or MIs. So a pneumothorax is the presence of air or gas or sometimes blood in the cavity between the lung and the chest wall, which causes the lung to collapse. So these people present with a sudden onset of chest pain, and sometimes it's just found incidentally on chest x-ray that you do for another reason. They're often short of breath, particularly if the pneumothorax is large. So when you examine them, they might have a little bit of decreased oxygen saturation, they might be a bit tachypneic, they're sometimes a little tachycardic, depending on the size of the pneumothorax. They'll have decreased air entry at the apices or throughout one side of the chest, and they'll have increased resonance if you do a percussion test. On an investigation, the chest x-ray will show a pneumothorax, which will show an absence of lung markings. So you'll see a dark spot on your x-ray. So you'll see an area where there should be lung and there isn't.
So when you're looking at a chest x-ray, like you're going through your evaluation of things, you start, right? You start from the outside, work your way in when you're looking at the x-ray, right? And so you go to find the lung markings and make sure you see them uniformly around the shape of the lung. And then that's how you would see if there's one at the edge that doesn't have it, right?
And it's the very apices that you would see a small pneumothorax at. So that's something you sort of should get in the habit of checking when you are going through your process of checking chest x-rays, is to look at the very tips of the lungs to see if there's lung markings up there. If they're small and the patient is stable, they'll often resolve spontaneously. They just need to be followed up to make sure that it goes away. And if it's a large pneumothorax, then we need to put in a chest tube. So there's four types of pneumothorax, and they are spontaneous. So these are the ones we classically think of. This is the tall, thin male who's out for a jog and gets a sudden onset of chest pain and shortness of breath. Typically, they're younger, age 10 to 30, although this can happen secondarily to lung disease, COPD, TB, cystic fibrosis, AIDS, pneumonia, bronchitis. Often the patient is coughing so hard that it just sort of pops. They'll be like, they typically come in this way, I was having a really bad coughing fit, and then I got this really bad chest pain, and now it's harder to breathe. It's not super common, but it's not uncommon either to see this in patients that have lung disease. An open pneumothorax, these are really obvious because they have penetrating trauma to the chest. So they've been stabbed or they've been shot or they've been impaled by some sort of object. These ones are hard to miss. So the third type of pneumothorax is a tension pneumothorax. So this is where there's a progressive buildup of air within the pleural space. So air can get into the pleural space, but it can't get out. So this causes a progressive buildup of pressure in the chest that pushes the mediastinum to the opposite hemithorax. So it pushes it across the chest and obstructs the venous return to the heart. So you're not getting blood within to the heart because the tension is so intense. So if you don't decompress this immediately, the patient will die. So this is often where you will do a needle decompression. They sometimes do this if you field, if you're really far away from anything and you've got an ambulance crew that's able to do this. But this is where you would do a needle decompression to correct the problem and then put in your test tube. You wouldn't have the time to put in a chest tube to correct this. And then the fourth type of pneumothorax would be a hemothorax, which is where we can, this comes from blunt trauma or penetrating trauma to the chest, where instead of air actually getting in, it's blood. And this will look a bit different on the chest x-ray, as the blood will show up white and not black. So let's get back to our case.
Okay, so as a review, this is a 62-year-old man with a one-hour history of progressive chest pain and shortness of breath. He's diaphoretic, and he seems to be in moderate respiratory distress. And he has recently traveled, is that correct?
Yep, he just got back from Florida.
His blood pressure was elevated at 160 over 90. Was that bilateral?
Yep, they were equal bilaterally. It was 160 over 90 on the left and 150 over 90 on the right.
Okay, and his heart rate is also elevated at 110. Respirations are 22. And his oxygen is actually okay at 97%. So obviously just at this point, things that we would have on our differential before even moving forward, we obviously have to have MI that we need to rule out.
Yep.
PE is also possible, right? Yep. Because he's had that recent travel, so he's at risk for developing clots. In terms of a dissection, I'm not overly concerned about a dissection happening. He doesn't seem to have different pulses or blood pressure on either side. And although he's in some moderate distress, he's not on the floor in pain.
Yeah. And it's been going on an hour, before he got here. So typically, with the aortic dissection, although some people are, reluctant to come into the hospital, they would present sooner than within an hour. And again, he's been stating that his pain is getting worse. And usually with a dissection, the pain is not better, but it was worse at the beginning.
Okay. Right. And then the last one we covered was a pneumothorax, which technically is still on the differential at this point.
Yep.
Okay.
So we go in, we examine this patient. He's diaphoretic, he's overweight, his heart sounds are normal, S1, S2, no murmurs, no rubs, lungs are clear to all saltation, abdomen is soft, it's non-tender, there's no organomegaly, there's no pulsatile masses, he's got no edema, he's got good pulses in his feet, and his blood pressures are equal bilaterally, and his pulses are equal in both radial arteries.
Okay. So at this point, we need to start some investigations to move any further. What would we start with?
So the first thing you want to do is get an ECG. Most hospitals have a policy of door to ECG in less than 10 minutes. That's typically what you'll sort of find in the hospital policy, is that somebody comes in with chest pain. The goal is to get that ECG within the first 10 minutes. You want to get IV access. You want to give him his aspirin, and his blood pressure is high enough that you could, and provided he's not taken any erectile dysfunction medications in the last day, then you would give him some nitro.
So even before we've confirmed anything, we're going to be delivering the aspirin and potentially nitro, depending on, his blood pressure is okay to handle nitro. So as long as his history doesn't show any contraindications medication-wise, we would give the nitro.
Yep, absolutely. That's okay. What we would do, because time is myocardium, as they say. And there's very little risk of giving somebody two aspirins and a shot of nitro. So, okay.
And if it is anything else on our differential, those things could actually be helpful anyway.
Yep.
Right. Okay.
Yep.
So then obviously we should get some blood work as well.
Yep.
Probably while we're putting in the IV, take out the blood at the same time.
Yeah. If you've got one of those systems
that allows you to do that. Okay. So standard things, we should probably get a CBC. We want to check the kidneys. So BUN, creatinine, lights. We're ruling out MI, so we need to get at least the first troponin in and see what that looks like. Would you be getting a D-dimer in this patient?
I probably would. I mean, he didn't have any calf tenderness on his exam, but he just returned from Florida, and it's an easy test to do. If it's positive, it sort of puts us in a tough situation because we end up having to get a CT. But at the same point, you don't want to miss a PE in this patient.
Okay. Are we didn't talk about having this on our differential, but we have discussed kind of some precipitating factors that can lead to MI and or PE, like pneumonia.
Yep.
And this is an older gentleman who, well, he's not terrible, he's 62, but he has been traveling recently. He is that snowbird. So he may have come into contact of some type of community-acquired pneumonia, things like that too, even though he doesn't have a fever, et cetera.
Yep, absolutely.
So a chest X-ray would just simply rule that out, correct?
Certainly. And then the other you might want to get a calcium and magnesium for this patient if his ECG shows any sort of arrhythmia that could be triggered by an electrolyte abnormality.
Oh, good point. Good point. So our lights, typical lights, will already include potassium and sodium, but not, we have to go out of our way to order the calcium and magnesium on there.
Yeah.
Right.
So we get his ECG back and it shows ST elevation in leads V1 through V4. And his chest X-ray is normal. So what do you think we should do now?
So obviously ST elevation MI is what we've got here. If we have clear ST elevation, that really kind of hones in our diagnosis. So at this point, we need to determine what kind of center we're at for the ideal type of treatment, right?
Yep. So if we're in a big academic center or a cardiac center, then we're going to send them for PCI. And
PCI stands for percutaneous intervention.
Yes. Okay. So they'll go in and do the angiography and hopefully put a stent in if it's amenable to that. And if it's not available, we're going to give this gentleman some TNKs, which is a clot-busting drug, put him on a heparin drip, and send him to our closest cardiac center.
Okay. So if we don't have the option of PCI, we still have ST elevation. So we've done most of our Mona already.
Mm-hmm.
So what if we don't have PCI, what are our options?
So our options then we... So if his pain is not improving with the aspirin and nitro, then we would give him some morphine.
Right.
Certainly you can put some oxygen on for comfort, although it's not necessary as his oxygen saturation is okay on room air. The theory behind giving oxygen is that if we maximize the oxygen in the blood, it'll better support the heart, although this is up for debate in the literature at this point. So if we don't send him for PCI, then we have to give him a clot-busting drug, which is usually TNKs.
Okay, so we just move to that. We skip the PCI, move to the TNKs, and call the nearest center to get
them. So we usually give the TNKs, start them on a heparin drip, and get them in the ambulance on their way to their closest PCI center so that they can be monitored by a cardiologist and have their angiogram and all the other interventions that they need.
Okay. So do you have any insight into why PCI is done for ST elevation and not for non-ST elevation MIs? I haven't, and I didn't know if you actually knew the answer to that.
Well, the reason is people who present with STEMIs are typically in worse condition. They have a persistent and typically large coronary artery that is blocked, and this causes large areas of the myocardium to be at risk of cell death. And they typically present with more severe chest pain, whereas non-ST elevation or NSTEMI patients, they have more of a heterogeneous condition. They have varying degrees of reduction of coronary artery flow, but it's not completely occluded.
Okay.
So they're more stable. They can wait longer. Sometimes we actually just treat these patients medically. They never end up getting a stent or a coronary artery bypass graft because either they're too sick or they're too frail or they don't want to.
Or their disease isn't severe enough.
So we end up treating this more like angina.
Unstable angina.
Yeah.
Right. Got it. Okay. Wonderful. Well, that will end our discussion on chest pain in the eMERGE. Join us next time.